You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
It is. What's up, and welcome everyone to Faces and Feels. I'm your host, Rafe Hewson, and today I'm joined by a very special guest. This man's first appearance on Faces and Feels, hopefully not the last, because we've already, I know, been talking for like 30 minutes and we didn't even press record. So I'm really looking forward to existing. We've existed in each other's Twitter sphere or whatever you want to call it for a while, but this is going to be a great chat with the one and only ICW No Holds Barred and ETU. I was going to say expect the unexpected, but thought I would blow the intro. Bobby Banks, how are you today, my man?
I'm doing well, thanks, Rafe. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. Thank you. First and foremost, I got to say this man's very accommodating. We were going to do this last week, but due to circumstances beyond the control, I had to cancel on him. But here he is, same time the very next week, like clockwork. So I appreciate you, man.
No problem.
Excellent. So before we kick into everything, we stroll down the lane of how you got involved in the world of ring announcing. Let's do that rewind thing and talk about how you first got into professional wrestling. So I always like to ask, what were some of the first faces of professional wrestlers that started to stand out to you?
Oh gosh, I watched it as a kid growing up, and was just enamored, as many were, as many have been, with the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. The very first wrestling show I ever went to live, my parents took me to Starrcade. I live in North Carolina. Starrcade that year, it was 1993, I believe, was in Charlotte, North Carolina, at what is now called the Bojangles Coliseum. And the main event was the champion, Big Van Vader, with Harley Race, against the challenger, the returning Nature Boy.
Wow, that's epic. And
yeah, Vader just beat the shit out of him the whole match, and then Flair ended up rolling him up and, you know, got the pin on him and won the title. And I was just like, the whole crowd, of course, was just so elated, because you see this big monster Vader, and then Flair making the comeback as a babyface at the time. Nobody thought he could do it. If you're watching the match, and then he just, you know, finds a way to win, and the crowd goes wild, and I was hooked.
That's so cool. What like a pillar matchup as well. Like, you're talking about like absolute legends of the game. Starrcade as well being like an absolutely epic show. That's crazy. No wonder you stood no chance, right?
There were a lot of legends, maybe not at the time, but would become legends on that show. I remember a man by the name of Stunning Steve Austin on the card. Cactus Jack was there. Remember him? And the Natural Dustin Rhodes. Dustin's still wrestling today at a very high level. That was a great show. A lot of great wrestlers.
That was wild. And how come you guys ended up going? Did you used to watch it on TV and stuff, or was it just like it took over the town and everybody got swept up in it and just got tickets?
I was just a kid and loved watching WCW on TV. WCW Saturday night, and I just loved watching it so much. And my parents surprised me with those tickets as a Christmas present one year.
That's awesome.
I think I was like maybe 9 years old at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that would have just like the atmosphere in an event like that. So we didn't have live wrestling events or anything here in Perth, let alone hardly in Australia and things like that. and where I grew up, 4 hours north of Perth, definitely not. But I used to watch those, you know, Rent the Coliseum home video and things like that, and I would look at those crowds and everybody going wild and all the signs and stuff and just be like, oh, I just want to be there so bad.
I was always a WCW fan growing up. And just to be able to go to Starrcade, it wasn't too far away from where we lived. That was quite the time. And I've been a wrestling fan ever since I was a kid.
Absolutely. As you got older and, you know, so you're 9 then, and as you stuck into to high school and doing things, did you have any, like, you know, want or, like, attempts at getting into sport and becoming a wrestler, or has it always just been like a thing, an entertainment entity to you?
In college, it did cross my mind. There was, I went to school in Virginia, and there was a place nearby, a wrestling camp, if you will, run by the legendary Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant.
Okay.
And I thought about going over there, and I did actually a couple times for some shows, some little shows that they would put on there. But I guess at the time I was focused on my studies and being successful outside of the world of professional wrestling, and I never pursued being a wrestler. I wish I had. I would have been great.
I got no doubt. You got a great voice. You could have been cutting a hell of a promo.
Oh, I would have cut a hell of a promo, but I think I would have been a good wrestler too. But, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, and I'm really glad I am where I am today just to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What did you study in school and stuff? What was your main focus and everything like that career-wise?
Philosophy.
Oh.
I have a previous life as a philosopher. I studied philosophy in college and then in graduate school too, and taught philosophy for 4 years at a nearby university. Oh. I became very interested in 19th century German philosophy, Hegel and then Nietzsche, and then 20th century French philosophy, in particular Foucault, Deleuze, and yeah, so there you go. I used to be a philosopher.
That is wild. I think the only word I understood in that sentence was Nietzsche. I've heard of that bloke, yeah. But that's about it. But that's amazing, though. What like an interesting path to like follow. Like it catches your interest, and then just pursuing it all the way into the point of teaching something must have felt like an accomplishment. It must have been something that you were really passionate about.
It was. I still count that as the greatest accomplishment of my life. It wasn't just interesting. It was probably the most interesting thing you could imagine. Yeah. And I miss it.
Yeah.
I miss it a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a great period in my life.
Yeah, sure. And so you changed up without getting into too much detail. What do you do now?
Now I work in government, in local government. Mm-hmm. Just sort of at the policy level and executive level, and it's a lot different. Yeah. I ended up going back to school and getting another graduate degree, and because found it very difficult to sort of move up the ranks, so to speak, as a philosopher.
Sure, exactly.
And I just had this idea, I guess the idea of being successful, you know, whatever that means, was instilled in me as a child. And I felt like I had to become successful. Again, yeah, that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but that's what it meant to me at the time.
Yeah.
And ended up where I am now.
I can imagine there's probably only so many, I guess, positions in philosophy. You know what I mean? Like, it's like we can all talk about this beautiful knowledge and kind of, you know, ponder these things and work through this stuff. But I can see if you're like, you know what, I kind of want to do more and earn more and do all these things that you're like, maybe I need to may need to switch it up a little bit. But I can see in your face, I'm like, you miss philosophy like a lot. Like I can see it hurts you. Like I can see
the best thing I've ever done in my life. I've lived an extraordinary fortunate life. Yeah. I was extremely fortunate to have the job that I had, and I just really, it was hard to make a living at it.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. That's so fascinating, though. Absolutely. I've never met a philosopher before, so yeah, absolutely my first.
Well, that was a former life. That was not Bobby Banks, so to speak. That was a different guy.
Well, let's talk about Bobby Banks a little bit. So while he's, teaching philosophy on the side or maybe making moves to earn another degree and go into what he does now, how did his wrestling fandom continue? Because your wrestling fandom is what led you to what you do now and how I even became aware of you. So how are you sort of keeping up with all this stuff? Did you have that period like we all do where you're like, I'm chasing girls, I'm going out, I'm doing things, I'm not watching wrestling, or has it always been a consistent in your life?
Well, I'm gay, so I'm still...
My apologies. Well, who am I just out here, making judgments?
I just never grew out of that phase. I'd like to one day. one of these days, I'm going to settle down.
Just always out here chasing.
yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. but I started getting back into professional wrestling, mm-hmm. I would say in 2016. I had been away from it for a while, sort of doing a lot of school and a lot of philosophy. And I happened upon a poster one day for a show not too far away from where I live now called CWF Mid-Atlantic. Mm-hmm. And if you are a fan of professional wrestling, you love the show, and you can watch a lot of the episodes still on YouTube. Mm-hmm. It was called CWF Mid-Atlantic, and it ran out of a very small town sort of near Burlington, North Carolina, called Gibsonville, at a place called the Gibsonville Sportatorium. Okay. And the main talent there at the time was Trevor Lee. I don't know if you've ever heard of
him. I do know who Trevor Lee is. Yeah, absolutely.
He went by a different name in the WWE, but he'll always be Trevor Lee to me.
Yeah. What was he like, Grimes or something like that, I think, or whatever. Yeah. I watched him on Impact. I went through there was like a phase where Impact was on TV here. Like there was like a pay-per-view channel on the cable thing that we had called Foxtel. And occasionally, like on the pay-per-view channel, just like once a week, they would just show the that week's Impact show. And I got into it just for the convenience of it being on, right? And I really enjoyed his work. I think he's a great wrestler. And it was in that era where I guess EC3 was there, Moose was there, all those guys, that real Billy Corgan had just taken it over. That, well, not all the way over. I think Dixie Carter was there. Silver and Blue type era, and I was really into that just because it was all really contained and I didn't need to watch 1,000 shows and stuff. Yeah. And yeah, I thought he was awesome.
There's another guy, Andrew Everett, that you may
remember. Yes, I know of him too. Mm-hmm.
Andrew Everett also wrestled out of the Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium there in Gibsonville all the time. Mm-hmm. So I got to see a lot of Andrew Everett. Tomorrow, actually, I'm headed up to Newark for the ETU show, ETU Whatever It Takes.
Yes.
But there's also a show here in North Carolina where I live, Deadlock Professional Wrestling, or DPW, puts on shows here all the time. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Everett is wrestling none other than Cedric Alexander, another North Carolina talent that you've seen on TV before.
Absolutely. He just finished up with the WWE recently, didn't he?
I think. Say what?
Did Cedric Alexander just finish up with WWE, right? He was in that original Cruiserweight 205 Live. Yeah. I know who it is. Yep.
But I think Trevor Lee is probably a professional wrestler I have ever seen live. I saw him wrestle Cedric Alexander at that Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium there in Gibsonville. And again, just incredibly entertaining. And I sort of stayed plugged into independent wrestling through my journeys off to Gibsonville and then got more involved during the pandemic on Twitter, actually.
Yes. Like we all kind of did. So I sort of found ICW No Holds Barred. I had gone to Japan just prior to the pandemic had happened. So we'd been a couple of times. I think it was maybe our second or third trip, and accidentally ended up at a Big Japan show. So, and I say accidentally because we're there for Wrestle Kingdom, but they were handing out flyers and there was Sorry to anyone who's heard this origin story before, but I'm gonna tell my friend. And we get handed a thing, and tons of flyers because, you know, Wrestle Kingdom's their WrestleMania, and so all the other shows are running their big show for the year. And we were like, hey, there's a Big Japan show tomorrow at Karakon Hall. It says 100 Light Tubes death matches, like the main event or whatever. I'm like, it might be kind of bloody, but do you guys want to check it out, sort of thing? And I had never even seen anything like that. And my wife and our friend were like, yeah, let's go. And in that main event, we're just watching like them hang light tubes from the rope and people in the front row putting on like ponchos and goggles. And we're like, what the fuck is going on? Like, we know this is kind of... And then it obviously happens. Abdullah Kobayashi is the champion at the time. I believe it was against Ito. And yeah, it was unbelievable. And we were like, that was crazy. And so then I start looking up stuff and getting into it. I found Casanova Valentine's documentary. And I was like, what is this? I would love to do stuff like this. And this is so cool. And then through that, found Struggles. Well, found GCW. And then found Struggles Podcast, the Spotlight series. And then I started to find out about ICW No Holds Barred. Then the first ICW No Holds Barred show I watch is the Atlantic City one, Volume 2, live in the parking lot, Akira coming off the roof, Reed Bentley cast, the whole deal. And it was unbelievable to me. I was like, this is something so, so cool. And like I said to Danny in that interview that just came out today, I was like, you guys really put wrestling on your back when nobody else could run. And it was pretty amazing. And so for you, were you involved or watching as a Volume 1, or was that the one that caught your eye? Whenabouts did they sort of come across your desk, so to speak?
This is a great question. And it's a question that I've researched. There's a lot about my experience that I just don't remember. It's sort of a blur.
Yeah.
So I went back in my Twitter timeline and looked up, you know, when was the first time I tweeted about ICW No Holds Barred?
Yeah.
And it was not Volume 2, it was Volume 3.
Really? Okay.
I suspect that Volume 2 show really generated a lot of buzz and got people talking because I somehow turned it on and watched Volume 3.
Absolutely. Another great show. They couldn't miss it that time. Remind me, where was Volume 3? Was that the one that was like on a farm or something like that? And it was like Schlack, like John Wayne Murdoch just like beats everybody at like the end. He's like beating up Schlack and beating up Nick Gage and like fucking all kinds of. Yeah.
It was in New Jersey. It was what they called the drive-in, the deathmatch drive-in.
Deathmatch drive-in. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But the main event was John Wayne Murdoch against Nick Gage.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And they really like sort of, it became very clear they were solidifying John Wayne as like their main guy. Because I was like, hell yeah, Nick Gage is here. Because at the time, I guess he was like my favorite wrestler in the world because he was very, very hot at the time in GCW. I was watching those like mosh pit entrances and I was devouring anything Nick Gage I could. And I was like, hell yeah, fucking Nick Gage. And then Nick Gage loses and I was like, what the fuck is going on? And like John Wayne just goes out. And then was I right? Is there like then a second match with Schlack or something straight on the tail of that? I remember there being something.
Is Schlack on this show?
Like I feel like he appears or something.
This was the one. You remember when Akira got like stabbed in the chest right near the heart and lost a chunk of his body
against Tremont? Was it?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
That match was on here, but I don't see Schlack on this show.
No, I feel like he appeared afterwards. It was like it wasn't a teller, like an announced match. I feel like he beats Gage sort of quickly. I don't know whether Gage was injured or something. He sort of beats Nick Gage really quickly and you're left going, holy fuck. And then fucking Schlack comes out and says something or whatever. And then he ends up in a second match straight away.
That does sound
familiar. Those were some fucking epic shows at the time.
It's Schlack against Casanova Valentine with Riley Madison. I used to hate her.
She's very hateable. I think those shows as well, and I kind of, again, flicking back to that Danny conversation, I posed to him, I was like, do you think that ICW would be where it was or hit like it did as quickly without the pandemic, because it really did feel like it was the only wrestling in the world for me. And it also felt like almost like post-apocalyptic fighting and shit. Everybody's locked down, the world's fucking ending, and these guys are just fighting in the middle of nowhere. Like,
yeah, you know, I listened to that podcast earlier today. I think the correct answer is that ICW would have been different, just yes. as the world would have been different.
Yeah.
But if you look back at that first show that they did, mm-hmm. it was jam-packed.
Yeah.
They had they had a lot of people there. Yeah. Volume 1.
It was very impressive, wasn't it? It was huge.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people watched Volume 2 and we're selling out all sorts of places these days. Mm-hmm. But that first volume prior to the pandemic was jam-packed. So mm-hmm. I think it would have been different without the pandemic, but mm-hmm. probably not less popular.
It's yeah, exactly. I think it definitely would have like maybe established a bit more of that like direct side by side with GCW, like we're here and we're doing these dream matches and we're doing that kind of thing, you know, head to head, where it ended up finding really its own niche in the kind of outlawness of it, I guess. Did you ever get to go to a Bloodshed show? Because they were always my favorite.
I never got to go to that damn barn. Yeah. I just want to clarify for everyone listening, it was not a shed.
No, it was a barn.
Struggles. That Struggles and Danny both. I like to fuck with them on that.
Blood barn doesn't sound as cool though.
that's what they say. But I thought it sounded cool.
Blood right? barn.
God damn it. No, they call it the Bloodshed, but yeah. technically it was not a shed at all. It was a barn.
I guess the pun between shed as a domicile versus the axe.
He put it on a t-shirt. I get that, but it was a barn.
Well, I'm glad you've cleared it up. We actually don't have barns here. I mean, we might have buildings that are called like are barns, but we don't call them barns. Everything's a shed.
They all have like horses and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We still just call them like a shed, a horse shed, or a warehouse, or thing. I just never hear anybody call anything a barn. But we also don't have as many horses.
Those places where you keep the horses?
Yeah.
Those are called barns.
Horse house. It's like a horse hole. I don't know. Anyway, so yeah, that's super interesting kind of call you at the same time. Did you get to go to... Did you go to those shows, like the Volume 3? Were you actually there, or you were watching live? Like,
just watching live and tweeting for the most part. Mm-hmm. The first show I ever went to was in Tampa, mm-hmm. And I was not there as Bobby Banks. I went to Joey Janela's Spring Break. Mm-hmm. I was just there for WrestleMania, mm-hmm. And. I thought I would head on over to the ICW show. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to be at that pawn shop, but mm-hmm. the weather was really bad. So they ended up having it. I can't remember the name of the bar there, but it was at a local bar. Mm-hmm. And it was the show where John Wayne Murdoch became the very first American Deathmatch world champion.
Yes, I know. I remember that one. It was that brewery they were running out of that had like all the fish paintings and stuff on the wall. It was some kind of like fish house brewery situation, and they were running a few shows at the time. Yeah, and they declare it's that, and it was all the exposed boards, right? Him and Eric Ryan, like that was wicked.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't remember a whole lot of it. I was drinking very heavily at the time. Closing in on 1,000 days sober here pretty soon. Really excited about that.
Oh, really? Congratulations. I'm not.
Drinking very heavily. Yeah. So I don't remember very much of it, but mm-hmm. I did go to the show. And if you watch it back on IWTV, you can just look for the hat. Just look for the heels hat. North Carolina Tar Heels hat, and you can see me.
There you go. I think I first started to notice you when I think it was you and Germ started wearing the suits, right? Like you were in the front row and you're wearing
I never coordinated that with Germ.
Yeah.
He was doing it long before I ever did. And uh-huh. I had the idea separately.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that was not coordinated with Germ.
Yeah, it was hilarious because it was almost like you were a duo, right? Like you and you guys would kind of sit sort of near each other, and you're both like, in these bright suits.
Any way, shape, or form. I love him though.
Yeah, yeah. That's great. But yeah, that is where I started to notice you and know who you were. I was like, oh, that's that guy from Twitter kind of thing. And then, then I was pleasantly surprised when I started to actually see you in the ring. I had a bit of time where I sort of fell off and had other stuff going on, and I was kind of behind in the shows. Then I was catching up and I was like, oh shit, Bobby Banks is in the ring.
Yeah. Again, we were talking a little bit before the show started, and I just don't know how that happened. What I remember of it, I became after volume 43 in Chattanooga. I went to volume 44 in New Jersey at what used to be the world famous H2O Wrestling Center, and then I went to 45 up there in Newark. We'll be back there for volume 80 here pretty soon. I'm really excited about that show. And I was just hooked at that point after I went to 43, 44, and 45. 45 is where Brandon Kirk lost the title to the Hoodfoot.
Yes.
Mo Atlas. But Cruel played a part in that. I don't know if you remember Cruel coming out and sort of abducting Casey Kirk that show. But I ever since I saw, Cruel, I was just hooked on Cruel.
Yeah, I love Cruel.
Me too, the atrocity. Awesome. Yeah. And at every show I just started screaming, all will burn. And I was very much into Cruel. Cruel was real to me, and Cruel is real.
Yeah. I can tell you Cruel is real, and I've met both men, but Cruel is real.
Yes, Cruel is real. And if you don't believe me, just close your eyes, count to three, and he'll be right behind you.
I can tell you a great Cruel story, actually. So when Cruel was here for ICW No Holds Barred, got to know the man, and I had met him on, had a really great interview with Cruel. It's called Thanksgiving with Cruel. If anybody wants to listen to it, it's in my feed and it's fascinating. But I didn't know what I was going to get, if it was just going to be a mask staring at me the whole time, right? But we had a very good conversation. But then I was speaking to the man behind Cruel, right? But so at the shows, when it is time, when Cruel's music hits, Cruel is there and he is a merciless vehicle of destruction, and this beast does not give a fuck, and I'm telling you right now. And this story I've got from two parts where I've got it from Casey Kirk's point of view and my point of view. So it's the last show of the tour. I am sitting right on the ring like this. Behind me is the backstage area, and there's a curtain to your right, and there's a multi-man scramble going on. And it was just made up of all like people who wanted to be in Deathmatch Down Under and locals and things like that. And it wasn't going super great, I don't think. And Joel had kind of said to one of the more senior guys, it sort of tapped him on the shoulder. He was like, you guys have got X amount of minutes or I'm sending Cruel. That guy heard that and he knew how it was going. And he was like, I'm ensuring that this goes over that time, right?
Yeah.
He would go on to regret this decision. So then flick to Casey's point of view. She's having a conversation with the gentleman that Cruel occupies his body when the music hits, kind of thing. And he's talking and they're having a laugh about something. Then the ice cold fucking Cruel music hits. And she said she watched his face change and then he just grabbed the mask like this and went. And he comes so hot. And my point of view, I now am looking to the right. I've heard Cruel's music. And there's one guy who's just been sort of thrown over near where the entrance is. And he stands up and Cruel just comes through the curtain and grabs this man and just throws him behind him through the curtain into the wall, kills him. He's just completely murdered. I would go on to speak to that man. He's like, I didn't know what the fuck hit me. I just got grabbed and I was suddenly hurtling backwards. And then he went into that ring and decimated like 10 men, but like in the stiffest fashion you've ever seen. He's dropping people on their heads. He's just throwing them to the concrete. Like, it was a massacre. It was unbelievable.
That's what I mean. Yeah, believe me when I say Krull is real.
Yeah. I watched him pick up a chair. I don't know if it was my chair or one right near me, but he grabbed one from the crowd right next to me, picked it up under his arm like this, and threw it like a discus across the warehouse. No care for anybody in the thing. It hit the far wall of the fucking warehouse right above the windows like it was nothing. It was the scariest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, there is no force in the natural world that even comes close to rivaling that of the atrocity.
Yeah, it's
I'll put it like that.
Unbelievable. I remember, did I see you used to have a bit of a thing with Krull in the crowd or something like that? He'd often stare you down.
Krull and I, there's always just a connection. Always been a connection, mm-hmm. and then he just sort of came to possess my soul.
Yeah, okay.
I became obsessed with Krull. And it, you know, it was just, I couldn't take my eyes off the man and, mm-hmm. and he had a hold of me in some sense, mm-hmm. you know, like a grip on my heart almost. Yes. Mm-hmm. And we've always had that special connection. I've never been afraid of him. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are afraid of Krull. I've always been drawn toward him. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're afraid of something, you can run away.
Absolutely.
I have always been drawn toward Krull. Mm. And at volume 50, mm-hmm. Before his match against Brandon Kirk, mm-hmm. He ended up putting the belt, the Independent Wrestling Championship of the World, the mm-hmm. IWTV World yes. Championship, he put the belt on my shoulder.
To hold it for him?
Yeah.
Wow.
To keep it warm.
That's
While he proceeded to attempt to murder on the person of Brandon Kirk there. And I didn't know it was happening. I had no idea what was going on. I was just a fan at the show. That was real.
Yeah.
As real as Krull is.
I remember watching that. That would make you a member, a charter member of what was dubbed Krull's Cunts over here in Australia. It was a name that he came up with. He, at the end of the show, everybody was in the ring, like having a bit of a love-in, talk about how much it meant. And then Krull grabs the mic, and they all look at him, and he was just like, "Thank you, cunts," and like left. And then we were talking to him, and he's like, "Yeah, Krull's cunts." And so I think we could safely say you're a member of Krull's Cunts, both with K's.
I think so.
Absolutely. And that would, had he been back sooner, or if he was back on this next tour, Krull's Cunts would rise up again.
He will always be back. Yeah. Krull,
it's eternal.
Transcends time. Yeah. Time is not real, and Krull transcends time. So don't worry. Krull will always be back.
Excellent. I love it. As what I'd refer to as the high priest of Krull, I think you would know.
Yeah, you can trust me on that. Yeah, believe that.
I have no doubt. One very interesting word that I had with Krull when I did do that podcast, I asked him about his injury at the very first show he had in ICW, No Holds Barred. It was one of those pawn shop shows. And I believe it was against Satu Jin, and that huge pane of glass broke wrong and slit his arm like to the bone. It was bad.
Gruesome.
Yeah. You wouldn't have known it because Krull was not affected by things like that.
It doesn't feel pain.
No, it does not feel pain in that moment. And I asked him, I'm like, do you think that injury was the best thing that could have happened to your career at that point? And he was like, it's wild to say, but yes. Like, he had been thinking about this entity and becoming this thing and wanting to be this, you know, unstoppable, you know, Jason Voorhees of Deathmatch and things like that. And it just added to the legend, right? Like the gussets on the chest and the no selling and this and just climbing out of the ring. Like, it just all worked. It just absolutely all worked.
Yeah. I mean, that was a gruesome injury.
Yeah.
It sure does stick in your mind's eye.
Yeah.
Krull covered in blood and not flinching.
Yeah. And just not even giving a fuck about it. It's wild because in wrestling, it's kind of strange a little bit morbid, but sometimes these terrible injuries can be, can literally like be the best things that happen to wrestlers. Not, I'm sure, through the rehab and all the thing, but how they then go on to add to their legend or their return and things like that. Sometimes it's what some of them need to get to that next level, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And Cruel's been through multiple injuries. I remember when he won the Independent Wrestling Championship of the World and he was injured. And then, of course, Matt Tremont ended up becoming the champion.
That's right.
And Cruel had to bury him. And so he did.
Yeah, yeah, he sure did.
He did.
Tremont, I wish I didn't.
Yeah. And Cruel's worked through a lot of trials and tribulations, but always comes out on the other side just as fierce, just as fiery as he was before.
Have you had the opportunity? Yeah, absolutely. As we said, eternal. Have you had the opportunity to announce him yet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think the first time I did it was actually over in the UK.
Oh, okay.
I want to say like volume 59, but I've done it several times since then. And I came up with a special ring announcement for him.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of fun. I remember he fought Big Lou Nixon over there in the UK.
Mm-hmm. Great
and
wrestler.
I had a really, really cool feel to it, big fight feel. It's a great match.
I haven't had a chance to go back and watch those UK shows. That might be on the docket today. Go and catch up on those.
Yeah, I think it was 59. Let me look on them. Yep, I was right. 59.
There you go.
Went to a little place called Hull over there. It's a cute little town. I really liked it over there a lot in the UK. Really want to go back. But it was, Cruel against Lou Nixon, and Cruel won the fight. But that was a hell of a fight.
That's sick. I got to check that out. I'm a big Lou Nixon fan as well, so that would be awesome.
Me too. Yeah. Lou Nixon's great.
He's so good. So as you said, you didn't really know how it happened, but when the opportunity sort of presented itself, had you, prior to that, you were saying you hadn't even considered doing ring announcing or anything like that. The opportunity just sort of presented itself, right?
I mean, maybe in private. But no, I had never even thought about actually getting in a professional wrestling ring other than, wanting to get in the ring somehow, some way.
Sure.
I think most fans have that desire to get inside of the ring.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a sacred space at the carnival, so to speak. And everyone wants to see what it's like. But no, I had never imagined it. And like I said before the show, one day Struggles was just like, hey, you want to ring announce for ETU? And I was like, I've never even gotten into a ring before. I wouldn't know how to get in the ring, much less be the ring announcer.
Yeah.
And Struggles was like, so?
Yeah.
I got fired up. I was like, all right, let's go. and I said, yeah, let's do it. And that was back in September, couple of years ago, I think, and I've been doing it ever since then. I started doing ICW a little bit later. Righteous Jesse is a good friend of mine.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Was the ring announcer at the time, and wanted to focus more on Righteous Jesse. I love Jesse so much. I got to see him recently, and that's when they asked me if I wanted to do that one, ICW No Holds Barred, and I've always been a huge fan of it, and so I just said sure.
Let it cook, absolutely.
Yeah, I just said sure. Let's do it.
It's funny. It's like sometimes if these opportunities present themselves, sometimes you just got to say yes and then figure it out. You know what I mean? And take
exactly.
Advantage of
that's
it.
What I did. Yeah. I heard that on the Spotlight series. I think it was the interview with Emil J, who is my personal favorite. And Emil was talking about how he got into it way back in the day, way back in the day. And yeah, sometimes you just got to say yes and figure it out.
Yeah. It's sort of commentary kind of happened like that for me. I do a company here called Dude, Where's My Ring, which is like a, you know, no ring bar fight type scenario, bit of a pit thing. And I kind of got involved to just sort of help with booking a venue and bands and things like that, because I'll go kick it off. And it was just going to be a one-off show, you know, and they knew I'd been around the music scene and could probably help out in that way. And as they were doing it, I was like, is anybody doing commentary? Who's sorting that out? And they're like, oh, yeah, no, we haven't looked at that yet. And I'm like, do you want me to sort it out? And they're like, yep. And I'm like, cool, now I've got to figure out how to do it. And just booked myself into the position, you know. Like, and then I had to go away, and we've been doing that for nearly 2 years now, you know, and it just, it flies. And there's the same with Bleeding Gums. Andrew over in the UK, in Scotland, he was starting his own promotion, and he's a good friend of mine just through podcasting and things like that, and we always talk. And I was like, if you need help with commentary, I can help you because I've been doing this. He's like, yeah, let's just do it together in post, you know. And those have been great opportunities.
Yeah, another good friend that I met on Twitter, none other than Trippin' Balls.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that from Twitter. Yeah.
He is doing commentary tonight for Unsanctioned Pro in Ohio. So shout out to Trippin' Balls. Great guy.
There you go. Look at all of us Twitter maniacs from COVID getting involved with wrestling. But I think it's like I said, you know, it's intention and it's care and things like that. And I've had some really nice compliments, you know, from people in the wrestling industry and stuff that are like, I kind of felt like a little bit of a pretender a bit, you know what I mean? I was like, look, I haven't come through a wrestling school or anything, and have I come up the right way or done that something? Like, none of that bullshit matters, dude. It's intention. It's like what you deliver and, you know, your skill set and things, and you just bring your own thing to it, and that's what people are going to be interested in, you know? And so that felt pretty good and made me feel a little bit less like I was maybe intruding, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. I feel like I am just a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
Bobby Banks is a wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get mad at me when I say that because, you know, they want me to be the ring announcer. And I think I'm all right, you know, halfway decent ring announcer. But at the end of the day, the thing that I'm extremely good at is being a fan of professional wrestling, and especially professional deathmatch wrestling. There are really like two versions of Bobby Banks. There's sort of like a friendly, happy-go-lucky Bob, and then there's a crazy Bob. And that crazy Bob really comes alive in the change, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It is interesting doing the ring announcing thing because you are the host of the show, and so it's more than just, you know, reading out a list of people's measurements and where they're from, like after the music happens and stuff. You really do need to steer the ship. I've only done ring announcing one time, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really cool. I tried to put my own spin on it. And you do. You know, you're talking to the fans. You're announcing everything. You hype them. You almost give them their cues when to cheer, in a sense, in the way that you phrase things and things like that. And so you do have to be on and know what's going on. So if you can do that, and if you can host and sort of relate to people in that way, you're just going to develop and improve as you go, you know?
Yeah, I felt horrible at it at first. I think I've gotten a little bit better as time has gone on, but it's very difficult. I never realized how difficult it was until I got in there and started trying to do it. But it takes a lot of practice.
Absolutely. And also, you know, you kind of want to get to that point as well where you know the people, or you know the announcements that you're going to do without notes and stuff. And that is not easy to do either. And sometimes you've got to, like, I know when I did it, I had a clipboard because I was not going to stuff anybody up. And also nobody in the fucking back would give me their proper info prior to the date. I was like, can everybody let me know all your stuff? And that, and they were just absolutely ribbing me. And like the intros that I had to manually get filled out with just bullshit. And I was like, okay, we're just all being dickheads and I'll just be a dickhead too. It just turned into a bit of a work.
Something that I'm proud of is early on, I solicited feedback from MLJ was one of them, but the struggles, just talking to them, hey, how could I get better at it? And one of the things they said was, you know, you're reading off your phone, you're looking at the cards, And I've always had a very good short-term memory. Long-term, not so great. It comes and goes in visions, visions from Cruel, so to speak.
Yeah, sure.
I've always had a really good short-term memory. And I was like, okay, I can memorize shit. And so every show, you get a list of all the wrestlers that are on it, and I sort of memorize what I'm gonna say, so that when I get in the ring, I'm really just not performing, but I go into fan mode, and it's like real to me.
Yeah.
And so when I say fighting, I'm like, let's go. It's real, and I can do that primarily because I practice a lot beforehand and memorize the stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that lends to it huge, like the not having notes or anything, and just it makes them seem like a bigger deal. It's like, of course we know this is a professional organization. This is huge. This is a big fight feel, and it, and then the crowd knows it, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, one of the bad things though is you can tell who I'm a fan of in the ring. I'm working on that, trying to be a little bit.
You're like more. The bias is coming across.
So you can kind of tell, you can tell who I'm a big fan of. Like Bobby Beverly is a good example, and Otis Coker. I've really gotten into Otis lately, and it really comes across. So I'm trying to practice that a little bit. Be a little bit more even keel and I guess more of a professional, so to speak.
I lean the other way. I let my biases show so hard. I'm like, this fucking prick.
On the other hand, that's part of what makes me me.
Yeah.
That's part of what makes Bobby Banks Bobby Banks. I've always been, and at least to a certain extent, always will be, primarily, first and foremost, a wrestling fan.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude.
It does rub some people the wrong way, but they're just going to have to deal with it.
Yeah, I think if that's the case, they might be taking it a little bit too seriously. I think at the end of the day, we're all wrestling fans, including the wrestlers themselves. So, you want to enjoy that. And, I mean, both of us have been influenced by struggles in our, I guess, wrestling careers. I'm doing these ones, you know what I mean? But, he showed me from very early on, even in his commentary, that's okay to be a fan, and he lets his biases show very obviously, and I think that lends to it, the vibe where you're watching and you feel like you're sitting on the couch and you're sitting next to him just watching a wrestling show, and talking shit and stuff. That's what I prefer, that than the down the line calling it sort of commentary, and that's not the kind of stuff I could ever do. But if you want to talk shit on wrestling while screaming at stuff, then I'm all over it,
That's why he and Jack Solomon are my absolute favorite team, commentary team in professional wrestling. I feel like Jack provides the perfect counterbalance to struggles. Struggles does like to be a little bit more colorful and get into it.
Uh-huh.
And Jack is there to give you a more classic cadence, and I think they're great together, but you're exactly right. That's what makes struggles so great.
Yeah.
Dial it up one time, kid. Let's go.
Kids, absolutely. Sometimes I remember in those big title matches with John Mayer, he'd just be like, come on, John. He's making you feel we don't want to lose this championship. He's our guy. And that's important,
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's so fun, I think, to be a wrestling fan, and I think the times when I have lost my interest in wrestling or felt like I'm burning out on it is maybe the times when I lose sight of that. You know what I mean? When I'm focused on doing too many things and stuff. Even just the show that I was talking to you at the other night when we messaged, I was doing commentary, but we had some staff fall through and stuff, and so I was doing commentary, lights, sound, smoke machine, fucking the ring keg, then did a segment in the ring that I was hosting, and it was just too much stuff. It's like I can do every single one of those things, but I realized after the show that I felt a little bit flat about it, just because I didn't feel like I could do any of the things as good as I can do any of them while I was doing them all at the same time, and I think focusing on the thing that you have fun with and being a fan and watching and stuff is always going to be the more rewarding experience, because once it becomes work, if you're focused on I'm going to be the serious announcer man and all that kind of stuff, you're not going to have as much fun with it.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, exactly.
110%. But I tell you, just thinking about struggles gets me fired up.
I'm looking forward to seeing him tomorrow
at ETU, but I also cannot imagine ICW, no holds barred, without the motherfucking struggles.
Yeah, I struggle with it without him there, just because, you know, he was a huge part of me getting into it. You know, he got me into it, and he's I count him as a friend, and I'd love to see him, and I love how worked up he gets about stuff. And so the fact that he's back to the shows and all that kind of stuff when he can be, makes me very happy.
He will forever live in my head too. With all, he's got all the catch lines, and like, remember how like at the start of every show he would go, "Mic check, 1, 2, yes sir, we are live."
He is I, and I am him.
Motherfucking Death Samurai Akira.
He's good at it, man. He knows how to do a catchphrase. He knows how to,
he's an
awesome man. And it's funny that he played when you told me that he was the one who kind of got you into the ring announcing thing, you know, he helped me get into podcasting, you know what I mean? He encouraged me to pursue the stuff like announcing and things like that. He still does. Like, he's a person that lifts people up around him. I know that he played a part in, you know, Jack being involved, and you know, it's just kind of who he is. He's always trying to lift people up.
Man, I think he may be from the future. You know, I feel like maybe in the future he controls all of professional wrestling and somehow has that foresight to know what's going to happen. But yeah, you know, I'm a struggles guy through and through. And I mentioned Akira. Did you see ICW No Holds Barred Volume 80
coming back?
John Wayne Murdoch versus the returning Akira.
Yeah, that's so sick.
Now the Psycho Samurai.
Psycho Samurai, current Big Japan Wrestling Deathmatch Champion. Huge.
This is a different Akira.
Yes.
John, I know John will be ready, but this is a different Akira.
Yeah, this isn't the Akira that was like tagging around with the rejects. Like, this is a different guy. This is world traveled. Yeah, absolutely.
And he's on a mission. I just hope, I know John will be ready. John's the ace. He'll be ready.
Surely. Surely. I wonder if I wonder if Akira's there when we're all there. We've barely even talked about Japan yet. So let's focus on that, because we're going to Japan, right? Like, so we've been reminiscing on ICW No Holds Barred. You're going there with ICW No Holds Barred. I was going there anyway, and the dates just happened to work out, and we just shifted a couple of things, and we're like, fuck it, we're going every show. So that's going to be wild. We're going to be in Japan watching ICW. It's going to be unbelievable, man.
Yeah, I can't. I won't believe it until I'm there.
Yeah.
It seems to be too far away for me.
Sure. It's actually not too far away. It's actually very soon. And it's stressing me out because I have a lot of shit to do in my real life, like between now and then, and there's not enough time in the day.
Yeah, I just got to remember to get on the plane. Just get on the plane.
Absolutely.
And just hope the plane gets there.
Yeah.
And I'll get off the plane and see what's over there.
Absolutely. You have never been to Japan before then?
Never.
Oh, you're in for an absolute treat. It's my favorite place in the world. My wife and I go pretty regularly, once a year, sometimes twice a year when we feel like blowing all our money. But yeah, this will be our 11th trip to Japan. Always catch wrestling when we're over there. It's a bit the first time.
A lot of folks say it's great. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm terrified, though.
Yeah, nah, it's going to be great. I know you were saying you don't love being in a plane, don't love traveling, but you know what? Get through it. Get some good music. You know, need some recommendations or whatever, I'll hit you up. We'll get you some podcasts, things like that. Focus on it. Dial in. Try and get some sleep, because once you're there, it will absolutely be worth it. And I would be shocked if you never go back in your life, because it might sound like a lot to say, but I truly believe there's life before Japan and life after Japan. And that is just when you see how the society operates, how the people conduct themselves, how they treat their city, how everything works, you're probably going to be in love with it, man, because it really does restore my faith in people. And when I'm feeling pretty burnt out on the world, I go there and I feel very good about it. And so I know it's not a perfect place. It's not a utopia. But you know what? I don't speak Japanese too good. And there's part of me that wants to keep it that way, because all I get is polite manners and a nice time. And they may be like, can this guy fuck off? But I don't know it. So it's totally fine.
Well, I hope they like me or don't hate me too much over there. I think I am going to get in the ring and do some ring announcing, which is wild.
That is wild.
But, I just am really looking forward to it. Also terrified. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And Masashi Takeda has our title belt.
He does.
The American Deathmatch World Championship. And I suspect that there are a couple of guys going over there who don't plan on leaving without that belt.
Yeah.
And one of them's bound to succeed. We'll see.
Absolutely. There's been a couple announced that regardless of which way it goes, whether he loses on the first night or the second or the third, he's got three absolute killers lined up against him. And so we'll see if he can retain or whether it's coming back to the US with one of the US guys.
Redacted is the only one that hasn't been a champion before, and he wants it bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
He wants it real bad. So, I don't know. My money's probably on him, but we'll see.
Absolutely.
He's ace of
the ace is second, I believe, right? John is second.
I call him Double E, the Earl of Extreme, Double EJWM.
The Earl of Extreme.
Yeah, John Wayne Murdoch's got a shot at it if Redacted doesn't get the job done. So
absolutely. And then what have they announced the third night? I'm mind blanking.
I think it was actually announced for the whole world to know on your podcast.
There you go. See, that's what I mean. But I have a lot of conversations. And Daddy told me so many matches when we were talking that I can't remember who it is off the top of my
head. I think he gave you the world exclusive.
Oh, well, there you go. World exclusive on my own podcast. I just can't remember it. So go listen to the Daddy tomorrow.
Well, I don't want to get in trouble because I don't think it has been dropped online yet, but I think what I heard, my sources are saying what I heard earlier today on this very show.
Oh, this very podcast that I can't remember.
Former two-time American Deathmatch World Champion, Joel Bateman.
There you go. Australians.
Apparently, I heard earlier today on this very show.
How funny that
allegedly,
I don't remember.
Allegedly, Joel Bateman will also be getting a shot at Takeda. Now, whether or not Takeda has the belt by then, we'll have to wait and see. But
we will have to wait.
That's what I heard on this show.
That's amazing that that it is him. It's also amazing that I could not remember that it was on my show with an interview with my friend Danny and about my personal friend Joel Bateman. The worst.
Danny said a lot of things. I think we'll have to wait till the graphic drops to know for sure, but that's just...
This is the rumor. This is the rumblings, exactly. But yeah, everybody, please forgive me. Whether on mic or off mic, Danny and I went through so many matches for Japan that I can't even keep one of them straight. There's so many. It's literally going to be a week of dream matches. It's going to be unbelievable. And I think there's a very good time for all. And you're going to love Japan, bud. Like, there's just so much to do. You're going to be blown away by the food and like the amazing places. And yeah, I just can't stress it. I'll give you the same tip I did for Daddy. Just make sure you've got like an international data SIM locked and loaded in your phone. So
I've already got that taken care of. I've looked in, that was the first thing. I was like, if anything, this phone will get me around.
Yeah, exactly. All you need is Google Maps, dude. And you can get anywhere, blue station to red station to whatever, you'll be fine. You'll be absolutely fine. And if you get super lost, just message your boy and we'll navigate it for you and send you a screenshot.
All right. Sounds good. I might take you up on that.
Yeah, absolutely. We got you for sure.
I hope I do get to go back one day. I'd like to go back with ICW No Holds Barred. Mm-hmm. I think ICW is just getting started.
Yeah.
It used to be till the wheels fall off. And, Danny said on the show earlier today when I listened to it that he's got a new set of wheels. Yeah. And I'm starting to believe him. I think that there are a couple of folks that I would like to go to Japan with that are not on this tour.
Yeah.
I miss the Kirks so damn bad.
Yeah.
Brandon Kirk is, oh God, he's such a good professional wrestler. Mm-hmm. Casey Kirk, I can't think of an American Deathmatch Championship run more epic than hers.
Yeah.
And then, of course, my personal Lord and Savior, the Atrocity Cruel.
Yeah. Danny even mentioned like the same people. It's like it seems wild to be gone without them almost.
No, those are my three names independently of what Dan thinks. Mm-hmm. If the Kirks somehow listen to this or someone who knows them hears this, I just want them to know that we love them very much and miss them dearly.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to see them there. There's so many names actually in the ICW universe that would just, I think, thrive in that environment.
And would be a dream come true.
Yeah, absolutely. For them and for the fans. Yeah, it's going to be crazy, man. Like, how many days we got? Like, I don't know, 20. It seems like way too close.
Wow, really? Oh,
so
damn.
I'll
be there a month from today.
Yeah, literally.
I'm going over there on June the 16th, I believe.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, so less than a month away, I will be in the land of the rising sun in Tokyo, Japan.
That's it.
And we're also heading down to Nagoya, too, I think.
Yes, absolutely. I think you're doing three shows in Tokyo?
Three shows, two in Tokyo, one in Nagoya.
One in Nagoya, and then is that...
The other show that I'm unfortunately not going to be there for, that...
The Dai show?
I think it's Sakuda's promotion.
It is, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That guy is crazy. that Sakuda fella?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm not into the stabbish yet, you know, like Ron Neme used to say.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Sakuda, terrifying.
So he's putting those skewers through people's faces and his own. It's I could do without it.
But Jun Kasai is going to be over there too. It's going to be wild seeing that whole situation with Kasai and Rena Yamashita.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they're going to be taking on Danny, and you know, Danny's been going through a lot of old age and injuries lately, so he's got himself a really good doctor. Goes by the name of Jack.
I'm not sure the murder surgeon is a good doctor.
Yeah. Oh, he is. He's board certified.
Oh, okay. Well, if he's board certified, I guess it's fine then. I mean,
all of the boards that you've seen, the barbed wire boards, the cut can boards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he knows all about that stuff.
He knows all about that. That's amazing. I fucking hope Redacted could do it, eh? I think that would just be so epic to hit Japan.
I'll be cheering for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to see him in real life. He's also been on the show, and he's a great dude, as Redacted. So, yeah, I can't wait to see it. I can't believe it's going to happen. It seems surreal. But first, I've got to go see these dudes next weekend in Australia. And then, like you said, a month, under a month, I'll be seeing you face-to-face in Japan, buddy. So I can't wait.
That's wild. Yeah, it's been really good talking to you. I looked back on Twitter earlier today. We've been talking to each other now for well over 3 years. Mm-hmm. The first interaction I found, I had a podcast idea.
Uh-huh.
The idea was every week we send the Struggles to a cheap motel in some god-awful corner of the country to study the nuances of American life. The location would be the podcast title, like somewhere between El Paso and Albuquerque, right outside of Mobile. And then there would be an episode called Fresno. And then you chimed in and said that you were looking forward to the Australian tour spinoff. And then that just lit me up. And I was like, oh, that's easy. Struggles goes down under in south of Brisbane in the middle of the summer. And then Struggles and Brandon meet up with Satu Jin to search the mean streets for a missing Neil Diamond Cutter. And then in the suburbs of Adelaide, Struggles faces his toughest test yet when Brandon is bitten in the ass by a terribly venomous snake. There's no time for a trip to the hospital. Either suck out the poison or watch his friend die.
Isn't that a good show? This is some great show. I actually I was like, do I remember this? And then when you said my comment, I was like, I do remember this. But yeah, you always have had entertaining little anecdotes and stuff on there. And that's how it started, you know, coming across my desk and obviously tweeting about ICW stuff and things like that. But yeah, it's wild. That's like 3+ years of like, you know, seeing each other's thoughts.
It is wild, but you've always been a really good guy to me. I just want to say I appreciate you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. I absolutely appreciate you. And I wanted to have a chance to, you know, vibe it up a little bit prior to the tours. and like just reach out to everybody that's sort of involved and sort of get a temperature check and get to know you and things like that before we go. So I can't wait. And as I said at the start, thanks for accommodating me. I've had some challenges in logistically in getting this show off lately, and I had to change a new on the day last week. So I'm really glad you were able to reschedule and we were able to get this done, because it's been so fun.
No problem. I think y'all are really in for a treat when they come over to Melbourne, mm-hmm. Which is real soon. I just want to say, Gore is a hoe.
That's that cruel bias showing again, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But that message was given to me by my personal Lord and Savior, just to let the world know Gore is still a hoe.
Now, if Gore hasn't listened to this, and I'm not sure he believes in listening to audio, I'll tell him that out of my own mouth and see if it gets me killed. So we'll see.
All right. I hope you live to see us in Tokyo.
Yeah, exactly. I may not be there because Krull got me killed, but we'll see how it goes. So tell everybody where they can follow your amazing Twitter and everything else, Bobby Banks.
It's BOBXQOQ. It's like a little, if you took Bob and did a little spin thing on it, mm-hmm. it would be Bob spinning around. BOBXQOQ on all platforms.
There you go. Absolutely. Check it out. The man's a great follow, and you'll get to, see his thoughts and feelings about everything. Man, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I guess I'll see you when I'm looking at you.
That's right. That's wild. I look forward to meeting you in the flesh.
Absolutely. It's going to be awesome, dude. It's going to be so good. Everybody, thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this chat with Bob. And we'll keep you updated on everything ICW No Holds Barred. And remember, it's all about peace, love, and fucking deathmatch wrestling. Peace. Thanks for listening. Faces and Feels is a proud member of the Count Out Podcasting Network. It is created and hosted by me, Rafe Houston, edited by myself and the amazing Ryan Neitzy, and the show is available on all good podcast platforms, so please go rate and subscribe. You can follow the show everywhere on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc. at Faces Feels Cast, and you can check out the Count Out Network and all our sister shows over there at Count Out Pod. If you'd like to book me for commentary, have an interview request, a topic suggestion, or you just want to say hi, you can email us at facesandfeels@gmail.com. With all that said, thanks for listening, and please support our friends and sponsors. Peace.
This has been a Count Out Podcast.
Hey, have you guys heard of the new show on the Count Out Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend Rafe Houston. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show, because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.